Hi there, folks. Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand. Please make sure you subscribe to us at our YouTube channel and at our website, aminutetomidnight.com. And please like and share this video. We do run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations. And if you're able to donate to us, it's always appreciated. I want to say a big thank you to the small number of folks that do donate to us. And if anyone else wants to, as I say, it's always much appreciated. And any music used, I've written, played and recorded. So now I will introduce today's guest. I have Leo Homan with me on the show today, and obviously Leo should need no introduction, having been many times on this show and a favourite guest of many people. So it is good to be talking to you again, Leo, today. And as always, there are plenty of things to cover, and you've written about a lot of them. So welcome back.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be back.
So I guess, I don't know where to start exactly, but I suppose for me the starting point I would like to quickly go to anyway is the Genesis mission, Trump, and the whole thing with AI and, you know, all the controls that go along with the surveillance and all that to do with it. And I know you did write about that, I suppose, about a week or so back. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, I guess people should think about the Genesis Project in the same vein as we saw the Trump administration unleash Operation Warp Speed during his first term. Warp Speed, as you know, was a program that was largely under the control of the military, and it allowed the COVID jabs to bypass all of the normal regulatory hurdles that a vaccine, a typical regular vaccine, would have to go through before it was approved to go to the into the arms of people in the general public. Well, the Genesis mission is to AI what Warp Speed was to the COVID shots. Okay, this is the proper perspective to look at it, from my opinion, because it eliminates all of the regulatory hurdles to the expansion of AI, artificial intelligence. They're even trying to now, on top of the Genesis Project, they're pressuring states, and there may be legislation coming, or an executive order, actually, is what is reportedly in the preparation stages, to make it illegal for any states to regulate AI. So not only will there be no watchdog, no oversight of big tech and its rollout of AI, it's already rolled out, but the expansion of AI, there'll not only be no regulation coming from the federal government, but there'll be no regulation allowed from the states. And if you try to regulate it as one of the 50 states, you can darn near guarantee that there's going to be some sort of blowback from the Trump administration. You'll probably have some federal funding cut off. There may be lawsuits, civil suits against the governor's offices or whoever might sign such, you know, legislation. It's going to be very predatory, in my opinion, because these AI data centers that are being built in, I believe, just about every state, they do not take into consideration the public's needs or the public's concerns. It's been well documented the amount of electricity that these things soak up, the amount of fresh water they need to cool the servers at these big data farms. That all means higher expenses for the average citizen, higher electric rates, higher water bills. There's even some predictions that when these data centers are all built, we could see rationing of electricity like typically goes on in many third world countries, where, you know, you're only allowed to use electricity for so many hours a day, and then you'll be cut off for so many hours because there's simply not enough electric power on the grid right now to power all of these massive data centers. And it's they're trying to expand the grid with by, you know, rejuvenating some of these old nuclear power plants that have been mothballed over the years. But that's all going to take time. And so there's going to be a real come to Jesus moment, I believe, for these companies that are building these data centers hand over fist. I know we've got at least a couple dozen of them proposed in the state I live in alone, and several have already been built. So, you know, it's just going to be interesting to watch how that all plays out.
Well, yeah, I could imagine with the electricity thing, if you, for example, get a really hot day or a really cold winter's day, yes, and electricity goes up, and there won't be enough supply to meet the demands, and obviously, you know, then that whole
and who's gonna win out in that battle? You know,
yeah,
you know, Bill Gates and Elon Musk with their massive data centers, Mark Zuckerberg, or you know, John Doe who lives in some unknown neighborhood. You know, I think we know who's gonna win that. You know, if push comes to shove and there's not enough electric power to go around, the data centers are gonna get theirs, and what's left over will go to the people.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And the whole thing with the rollout of legislation to do with AI, and then it also goes into the real ID and all that type of thing as well. And I know, you know, they're becoming more strict on that and the use of that too.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, I just came out with an article a couple days ago on that. Where the Trump administration, you know, that glorious conservative entering a new golden age of conservatism administration of President Donald Trump is now the one that has been chosen by the globalists to be the big enforcer of the Real ID Act of 2005. Mm-hmm. Every president since 2005 has refused to really crack down on the states and make Real ID the law of the land. But along comes Donald Trump, the champion of conservatives, and he's the one to do it. He's really holding the feet to the fire. Then they've just entered what they call the next phase of enforcement on the Real ID, and that involves a $45 fine if you show up at an airport and want to get on a plane and don't have a Real ID compliant driver's license, or you don't have a passport. Not only will they fine you $45, but they're going to take your biometric data, probably a face scan. So, yeah, he is really cracking down on enforcement of the biometric Real ID, which could evolve into a full-blown digital ID at some point.
And which is already happening in other countries, of course.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty sobering and concerning. And it's always they use the guise of safety, keeping everyone safe. It's either safety or it's convenience and, you know, making things easier for people, and they sell
efficiency, right? Yeah. It's more efficient and it's safer and it's more secure, and we're all going to be happy-go-lucky citizens and not have to ever worry about terrorism again, because daddy government is looking after us, Tony, and the only way they can do it is to make sure that we're all digitized and plugged into this digital beast system, having our humanity stolen, all treated the same like a number, and that's you know, you don't need to complain about it. If you do, you're just one of these you know, Luddites who don't understand modern technology, and you don't want to go along with it all, and you're going to be considered basically a troublemaker who's going to probably be put on a watch list at some point.
And yeah, you mentioned the word, you know, terrorism and being set to make things safer from that. And of course, we've just had this this guy in DC, the Afghan national who settled in the US that shot up two National Guards people and was shouting apparently Allahu Akbar whilst doing it. And so that's really interesting that, you know, normally the media would shut out that he'd yelled that sort of stuff out, but now it's being put out there for everyone to see. So,
yes,
you know, it's very interesting.
I'm glad you picked up on that. That is a really good perception there, because you're exactly right. The media would normally downplay that or ignore it altogether, but now they kind of highlighted it. It's to get people afraid of terrorism again, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole reason we see terroristic acts. Isn't it interesting how they can fade away for years with no attacks? And then suddenly you have this high-profile one in the nation's capital, and I predict there'll be more. Why? Because it is now advantageous to get the fear stoked up again because the government is coming at us with these new digital security systems. And in order to get us to all buy into it, conservatives included, it needs to, A, come from a conservative president. The liberals have no problem with these things, okay? Yeah. It would never be a problem or an issue getting liberals to sign up for a digital ID.
Yeah.
They had to get the conservatives rolled up. They had to get them into the program, into the system. The way to do that is make it come through a conservative Republican president like Donald Trump, the patriotic, chest-thumping American president, and then also stoke up the fear, get some more terrorist attacks rolling. I think this is just the first of many to come. It's going to be back in the news, Islamic terrorism. You watch, after years of the media trying to downplay all that and really not us experiencing many attacks. I think there was one terrorist attack in Trump's entire first term.
Yeah.
I don't remember any. I'm probably missing one or two, but I don't remember any during the Biden administration. Yeah. And now we've already had one in the first year of the Trump administration, and I predict there'll be more because it is it just plays right into the hands of the globalists at this point in history when the whole world is moving to the digital ID, digital money system, and tokenization and social credit scoring, and America will lag behind the rest of the world if they are not scared into the system by these fearmongers. And the best way to do that is to get some of these sleeper cells, get some of these lone wolf sleepers to commit terrorist attacks. Now, isn't it interesting that this fellow who carried out the attack in D.C. the day before, was the day before or the day after? I think it was the day before Thanksgiving. He was a CIA asset in Afghanistan. Mm. He was trained by the CIA, and he was cultivated by the CIA and used by the CIA in Afghanistan. Then they transport him here to America. Mission not yet accomplished, because the CIA asset, I believe, was put up to this attack in Washington, D.C. No question about it. You don't just travel from all the way from Washington State across country to shoot two National Guardsmen in the nation's capital with a .357 revolver, you know, for jihad. He could have found numerous other targets and more and larger targets by going into some no-go zone, no-gun zone, excuse me, closer to his home and killing a bunch of people. If he was just, you know, if he was just concerned about committing jihad, that would have been his modus operandi. He would not have traveled all the way across country just to shoot two National Guardsmen.
Well, the CIA, of course, was responsible for programs like MKUltra and the mind control, and all of that. And so, very conceivably, it could have been that way, that, you know, subliminal messaging to that person and all sorts of things to trigger them at that right moment when they wanted them to act. Who knows? We will never know, of course, for sure. But
absolutely. Yes. So, you know, there's a lot going on there that we're not being told, but it is out there that it's not debatable. It is a fact that he was trained and employed by the CIA and special forces in Afghanistan, starting in I don't know, but I guess he would have been in his early 20s when that started. And he's now 29 years old and has been in America since 2021, you know, laying dormant, waiting for his assignment, and now it's been given.
See, the other side of this is the U.S. Trump administration came out a couple of days ago saying, talking about banning all people traveling from countries that are liable to, you know, cause problems, basically. So a carpet ban, ban on all of those countries. And then it's interesting because I looked at comments on an article on Fox News about that, and you get all these people, conservative people, saying, yeah, why not we ban everybody from entering the US for 10 years? You know, doesn't matter where they come from. We need to get rid of all of these ones and stop new ones coming in. And I'm thinking, that's really interesting. I bet a lot of them are plants too, sowing that whole thing in there so that not only do you stop anybody coming into the US, but obviously the other side of that is you then stop people from leaving the US, you know, citizens and all that too. So it makes it easier to lock a country down. And so I think that there's a lot of things at play here. And more to than what your eye sees with all of this.
That's always the case, isn't it? I mean, we're being told, for instance, that this upcoming war against Venezuela is about drug trafficking.
Yeah.
You know, I just posted an article literally minutes before we went on the air here, pointing out it's an investigative article. I can't cover it all here, but I encourage people to go read it. The record of Donald Trump when it comes to drugs, you know, both illegal drugs and legal drugs that are harmful to Americans. You know, he goes on about how, you know, we're going to kill all these drug traffickers because they're poisoning Americans and poisoning the American people in our cities. And we need to eliminate them. No questions asked. If they're even suspected of being a drug runner, we're going to blow their boat out of the water. No questions asked at all. We're going to be the judge, jury, and executioner all in one fell swoop and just shoot those boats right out of the water, which, in my opinion, is against international law. It's against all norms of military operations. Especially when you're talking about this one case on September 2nd, where they the U.S. military fired on a suspected drug cartel vessel, a small speedboat. Apparently, two of the occupants were still alive, clinging to the wreckage. And the officer, the admiral in charge of that naval fleet, gave the order to fire a second time and kill everybody, including those injured individuals who were out there in the water trying to survive. And that is just in no way, shape, or form a legal military action. Yeah. You can talk to just about any military expert, and he or she will tell you that. But we're supposed to believe that the Trump administration is so concerned about drugs coming into the United States that it's even willing to go to that extent to take out drug traffickers, when it hasn't shown any proof, by the way, that these are actual drug traffickers, because these speedboats don't have the capacity to make it to America. Mm. They would have to refuel like a dozen or more times to get here. And so it's just really, really shady what's been going on in this regard. But if you give them the benefit of doubt, I guess you could say, you know, they've just had it with all these drugs coming into America, so they're willing to take extrajudicial precautions and go, you know, maybe take some risks of being convicted as war criminals because they are just so intent on eliminating any possibility, no matter how remote, of drugs entering this country. Okay, I could maybe understand that argument. After you read my article, that argument is proven to be invalid. And I've got all the receipts, Tony, all the links showing Trump's record on promoting dangerous drugs, mostly of the legal nature, starting with Operation Warp Speed and now these harmful, dangerous, risky weight loss drugs, but also in the realm of illegal drugs. Do you know that he just yesterday pardoned the most notorious drug trafficker in Latin America, Mr. Juan Hernandez, out of Honduras? He was serving a multi-decade sentence at a prison, a federal prison in West Virginia, and he walked out of there yesterday after being pardoned by President Trump. If he were that concerned about illegal drugs being trafficked into the United States, do you think he would have made that call?
Well, on what grounds did he pardon him?
You know, I don't know. He was a convicted, notorious drug trafficker. I don't think there's any grounds that could really justify such a move. But he is a former president as well, I believe, of Honduras. So I can only surmise that there's something political involved in the decision.
Okay, so what about Trump and Albert Bourla? From, you know, the guy from Pfizer.
That's another thing I cover in the article, that Albert Bourla is one of the most insidious drug company executives in the world right now. He is the CEO of Pfizer. Pfizer has put out many proven dangerous drugs, many that have been had to be recalled from the market. And many that were never recalled and should have been, like the Pfizer COVID so-called vaccine, which, as you know, has killed hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, and injured tons of others with really debilitating injuries in many cases that people are now living with. And yet that medical treatment, whatever it is, I don't even know if we can call it a drug, which is consists of synthetic messenger RNA and spike proteins that were found in the COVID virus, that it actually instructs the body to manufacture these dangerous spike proteins. He is one of Trump's best friends from the pharmaceutical industry. He's been invited to the White House multiple times, most recently just a couple of weeks ago, where Trump, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, where Trump has heaped praise upon him as a, you know, brilliant businessman and amazing human being. So, yeah, it doesn't seem to matter whether it's a legal drug or an illegal drug, both of which are poisoning Americans in spades. We've seen no real accountability applied to these, to the purveyors of these drugs by the Trump administration. And yet we're supposed to believe now that it is out of a concern for drugs, quote, pouring into America and poisoning our citizens, that he is taking out these suspected drug vessels with military munitions. You know, the proper way to go about it, I have absolutely no sympathy for hardened drug traffickers being punished for their evil doings. Yeah. But there's a way to go about it. You board their vessels, you inspect and search the vessels. If you find drugs, you detain the occupants of those vessels. You put them on trial and you lock them up.
Yeah.
This is the way, this is the rule of law. But, you know, have we become that lawless that we no longer respect the rule of law in this country and we just shoot first and ask questions later? I mean, every American with a conscience should be concerned about this, because there's absolutely no, and now we're going to do the same thing. President Trump just came out yesterday or the day before and said, we're not only going to continue doing this on the high seas, which really amounts to a violent form of piracy, and you could say, but we're also now going to do the same We're going to use the same tactics, the same lawless tactics, to go after suspected drug traffickers on land in in not just Venezuela, but multiple other Latin American countries. America truly is changing before our very eyes from a country that has a very rich tradition of the rule of law to a rogue nation that goes into other sovereign countries and takes out people of its own choosing without a declaration of war, without any respect for the rule of law, just willy-nilly. You know, conservatives were railing against this type of behavior when President Obama did it, when he was doing drone strikes on suspected terrorists in foreign countries. There was a lot of backlash from conservative voices, but because it's being done now by one of our guys, crickets, dead silence. I'm one of the few who is even talking about it, Tony.
I know most people are still jumped on that Trump bandwagon and stayed on it, no matter what happens with the what direction this administration goes or how much they bring in the surveillance and this technology, AI, and all the other things that go along with it. People have just stayed on that bandwagon and are not calling it out, I suppose, because, you know, well, it would be an about face and they would struggle to save their own face if they go, hey, this isn't right. But because so many of them said, you've got to vote for this guy, you've got to vote for Trump, you've got to... you know, that well, this is the reality. And I mean, I've said all along, I don't believe it matters who anyway, that the elite have their man that they want in power. Was never going to be Kamala Harris. She was not the one for the job. No. Joe Biden was past it. You know, they always had Trump as their next guy. And it didn't matter who you voted for because that was who they had
100%. Planned. I could not agree more with that statement, Tony. You really just nailed it. And I'm of the personal opinion, just my opinion, okay? I can't prove this, and I don't know that anyone could. But I have a hunch that all of the lawfare and all of the legal troubles that Trump was faced with while running for a second term, that was all smoke and mirrors, meant to give him this martyr complex, which really increased his popularity among Republican voters. I know personally a lot of people who were kind of fed up to hear with Trump after his first term and the way he handled COVID and everything with the lockdowns and what have you. And they were not really excited about going to the polls in again in 2024 with the choice of a unlikable Democrat and an unlikable, a now unlikable Republican. But after they saw all of the lawsuits, all of the criminal proceedings that were launched against Trump, they really kind of changed their mind and felt like he had come under siege by the Democrats. And so they started getting more excited about Trump. They would have voted for DeSantis or one of those other candidates or, you know, if it hadn't been for all of the persecution, perceived persecution, that came against Trump. Now, I'm not saying everyone who filed a case against him was working for the globalists knowingly, but I do feel like they were given free rein and knowing that these cases would never amount to anything in the end, that they would all be dismissed. And then you get Trump elected based on this martyr complex that he had and made him actually way more popular than he was.
And then you have another martyr for the ecumenical cause and we've got to unite all these religions together and everyone jumping on the bandwagon, whether you're Mormon or Catholic or Christian or whatever, and I'm talking about the whole Charlie Kirk thing, which I don't want to go down that rabbit trail, but it's the same type of thing. It follows that same playbook in a way.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it interesting how that just suddenly faded out of the news too? It came and it went, you know, almost as suddenly. It went almost as suddenly as it came into the news cycle. And there's still a lot of questions about that
that
will probably never get answered.
That's true. What else have you been covering that you want to mention today?
There's a lot going on technology-wise that I've been writing about. You've got the Ukraine-Russia war still at a, it's kind of entered a new interesting phase, I would say, where the peace deals are back on the table after a few months, 2 or 3 months of backing off. Trump is now trying to solve that war again. But it still doesn't seem like it's ready to break through. There's not going to be any real breakthrough because what's acceptable to one party, Ukraine, is not acceptable to the other, Russia. And no matter how much forcing or is done by the Trump administration, you can't force a peace upon two countries that hate each other, right? I mean, we've seen the same thing with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Trump played up that ceasefire like it was a big deal, and the Gaza peace plan was announced with great fanfare. But both sides are violating that deal, you know, almost daily. And so the same thing's going to happen with the Russia-Ukraine war. I think even if they do announce a big peace deal in the next few weeks or months, whatever, it will be violated and they'll be back at war before it's all said and done. And, I think really Ukraine would like a peace deal now more than Russia, because that would give them time to regroup, rearm, and reorganize, because they are really losing that war quite badly right now. They're losing territory pretty much little by little every day, including some really key cities that have fallen or are about to fall. And so they really need a peace deal. But Putin, I think, is too smart to be hoodwinked into a peace deal that's going to end up with him losing all of the gains that he's made through this decision to go in with his military operation in Ukraine. I mean, he needed a buffer zone. He wanted a buffer zone from Kiev because they were launching mortar attacks on Russian-speaking residents of eastern Ukraine. That had been going on and off since 2014, and he saw the Ukrainian army getting bigger and bigger, being trained by the West, and then he finally said, you know, that's it. I'm going to have to go in and create some space between us and them, and that's basically mostly in the Donbass area, and you know, he's largely accomplished the mission. There's still some areas of Donbass that the Ukrainians do hold. But the longer this war goes on, I think they're going to lose all of it. And so Ukraine knows that. They need a peace deal. They need one soon, or the whole front is going to collapse and the Russians are just going to march through and take it all. And they're going to be left with a really bad deal then. But the problem is Trump knows this, but he can't get Putin to take the bait and agree to a deal that is not in Putin's best interest.
My wife, Holly, and I covered last week in a show, one of the things we did was about the Economist magazine cover, The World Ahead for 2026, and that, of course, is a globalist magazine through and through, you know, partly Rothschild-owned and so on. But that cover is full of war. So for 2026, yes, as well as what looks like probably economic collapse or something along those lines, AI,
dollar, US dollar failure.
Yes, yeah. And the 250th anniversary for the US, and, you know, they had a fist coming out of the cake and things, you know, it's like probably unrest, civil unrest, and whatever else. So 2026, you know, looks like a very unstable year coming up. And I know we're getting towards the end of this year, but I can't see at this point the Ukraine-Russia war ending anytime soon. It just doesn't seem likely to me.
No, I think you have good reason to believe that. And the question for me isn't when is it going to end, The question is, when is it going to get broadened and expanded to include other countries? Mm. Yeah. Because we've seen the recent statements just this week out of NATO, a high up NATO officer. He's in charge of the military committee of NATO, which I find interesting that they have a military committee when the whole thing is a military alliance, you know? Yeah. But anyway, this gentleman from NATO said that for the first time, we have a NATO officer saying that, you know, we may have to launch a first strike against Russia, a preemptive strike. Those are dangerous words. And Putin, they were not lost on Vladimir Putin, who shot back and said, you know what? Russia does not want war with Europe. But if Europe wants to persist in having war with us, basically, he said, bring it on. I'm ready.
Yeah, I heard that. I saw that. Yeah, exactly. So it does look ominous for that situation.
I had predicted, you know, some months ago that I thought, you know, World War III, we're already in World War III, but the kinetic version, we should say, of World War III, where direct combat between U.S. and Western troops and Russians and Chinese and North Korea, I thought that might not happen until maybe 2027. But given NATO, this NATO commander's statements and some of the other things we're hearing and you know, I have to wonder now if maybe if I don't need to move up my timetable for World War III to break out for 2026 instead of 2027, Tony.
Yes, well, that's a distinct possibility. I think it won't be accidental, whatever happens. It'll fit in with the timeline for everything else they're trying to get in place first. You know, all these other things we've discussed, I think. It'll be something that they'll want to use all the crises together to finally put the clamps on everyone. That's how I see it. So whether
go ahead.
Yeah, whether that ends up in 2026, I don't know. It could well be.
Yeah. I think for the globalists, they know that they need war to pull off all what they have. On the shelf, the digitization of humanity and the total control of every facet of our lives through algorithms and the depopulation and all of that. I think they know that in order to pull that off in a widespread fashion, not just in pockets of the world, but on the whole world, I think they know that they need not just a war, but a big war, a world war.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the World War I, World War II, and I'm sure some of the other huge wars down through history, that's where we see the biggest changes coming on the heels of a big war like that. They redraw the maps. They're able to get all new economic systems in place.
Yeah.
You know, the power brokers who sit at the table of the world strategic decision-making changes in many cases. And so, yeah, I think World War II, it's not a question of if, but when, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, okay, I guess we'll leave it at that and look to wrap up. But can you tell the listeners again where they find you and your articles?
Yeah, a couple of places. Excuse me. My Substack is probably the most active place for my writing. You can find that by going to leohoman.substack.com. I also have a website at leohoman.com. And you can find me on Telegram where I post as well. Not just on there, I post not just my own articles, but articles that I find interesting from other people's. And you can find me there on Telegram by searching Leo Homan, author/journalist.
Okay, well, thanks again for your insight today, Leo. It's been another fascinating discussion, and I always look forward to having you on, actually, because I learn a lot from what you're researching all the time, and I read all of your articles pretty much too. So I do encourage others to subscribe to you. I think that's a very sensible thing to do because they will get a lot of information they won't find elsewhere because no one else much is writing a lot of what you are, that type of subject. So at least not from the perspective.
Well, that's because I'm independent. I don't, you know, I don't take ads from pharmaceutical companies. Yeah. I don't take grants or handouts from the government. I rely solely on my readers for donations or, you know, you can subscribe to my Substack. You can get my articles for free. I do not withhold. I think maybe 2 times in 2 years, I posted an article that was for paid subscribers only. But yet I am only able to continue because I do have some gracious readers who, you know, have upgraded from free to paid subscriptions or sent me donations. So that's what keeps me going. I don't have to answer to any corporations or any government.
Yeah, that's good. And it's pretty much the same with A Minute to Midnight. We don't do any ads.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I appreciate your work tremendously, Tony. And if I don't touch base with you again this month, Merry Christmas to you and all of your wonderful viewers.
And the same to you too. Merry Christmas and everything to you. I'm sure we probably will catch up early in the new year, I'm hoping, is after this.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate you and your audience.
And vice versa. So, folks, that's it. Please, as I said earlier, make sure you subscribe to us at our website and our YouTube channel. And also we have an Apple Podcasts channel as well. And as I mentioned earlier, it's much appreciated when people donate to us as well. So God bless and God willing, we'll be back with another show in a few days' time. So stay safe and keep looking upwards.